As you know, it's important to me that the supplements I recommend and use are of the highest quality. That's why I stock the Protocol for Life Balance product line at my online dispensary, drhoffman.com/protocolforlifebalance. Protocol for Life Balance offers a wide range of professional-grade products using ingredients backed by strong scientific research, including a suite of supplements for digestive support, handle tougher digestive problems, and larger, more complex meals with GI Guard AM, enzymes HCL, oregano oil, and peppermint oil, GI. This premium collection may help to maintain the integrity of your stomach lining and promote gastric comfort, help reduce occasional bloating, indigestion, heartburn, gas, and other normal diet-related digestive disturbances, as well as maintain healthy intestinal flora balance. For more information and to order, just go to drhoffman.com/protocolforlifebalance. That's drhoffman.com/protocolforlifebalance. Protocol for Life Balance is an A-rated GMP manufacturer of premium dietary supplements. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Today we're going to talk about integrative rheumatology. That's an intelligent medicine approach to rheumatological conditions, which comprise a wide array of challenging maladies, including, of course, rheumatoid arthritis, lupus, psoriatic arthritis, and the so-called collagen vascular diseases, things like Sjogren's syndrome, and so on. Our guest is Dr. Jill Weintraub. She is the author, a co-author of a book entitled Strategies to Treat Psoriatic and, Strategies to Treat Psoriasis and Psoriatic Arthritis, Everything You Wish Your Doctor Had Told You. She is a double board certified integrative rheumatologist. In other words, she's certified both in rheumatology, with a subspecialty training at the Hospital for Joint Diseases, NYU. And she's also the Andrew Lowell Fellowship recipient for the study of integrative medicine with Dr. Andrew Weil at the Weil Center in Arizona. She was chief of rheumatology at a large multi-specialty group for over 10 years, named one of New York's best doctors. She practices in several venues, including an office in New York, and is the founder of Integrative Rheumatology Consultants. You can find them at jillweintraubmd.com. And she's also the co-creator of Kitchen Prescription, a cooking and wellness blog. So she really incorporates diet as part of her strategy for optimizing the outcomes for her patients. Dr. Weintraub, it's a pleasure having you on Intelligent Medicine. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. It's an honor to be here.
Well, as we do with most guests, tell us a little bit about your journey, because it seems that you started out in conventional medicine, went on to be board certified in rheumatology, which not often recognizes the role that diet and lifestyle, certain nutritional supplements can play in optimizing outcomes. So how did you make a transition towards embracing natural approaches?
Yeah, well, you hit it on the head. I really felt like as much as I enjoyed practicing rheumatology, there wasn't a big forum within my specialty for recognizing that diet and lifestyle and mind-body medicine play such a big role in how the body copes with inflammation. And so I really feel like my patients brought that to me over and over again, asking me, you know, what to do, what to eat, should they take supplements, what's stress causing their disease to flare, did it trigger it in the first place? And I found that I really couldn't answer those questions with the training that I had been given in conventional medicine. So, you know, after some soul searching and some thinking during the pandemic, I decided that I was going to combine both my conventional training. And I went back and I got some integrative medicine training with Dr. Andrew Weil, as you had mentioned. And that really helped me understand that, you know, these things are not siloed. You know, medication works much better when people optimize their lifestyle. and vice versa. And I really wanted to figure out a forum in which to combine both of them. So that was really the genesis of my practice.
And by the way, I noticed that we're a fellow alums of Albert Einstein College of Medicine. I believe I a little earlier than you. And so tell us a little bit about the Andrew Weil Center for Integrative Medicine. What was that program like, and what insights did it bring you?
You know, it brought me so many insights. You know, one of the tenets that they teach there is that doctors really need to heal themselves so that they themselves can be healers. And, you know, when that was said to me, I think I was seeing about 25 patients a day, and I was running an infusion center. And I really wasn't taking very good care of myself. Felt like the stress and anxiety that I was always coping with really affected my ability to listen to my patients. And so going through the fellowship training and learning about other whole systems of medicine, like traditional Chinese medicine and Ayurvedic, and others as well. And just the pace of the fellowship and the fact that they wanted us to participate in a lot of those types of healing therapies that those other whole systems of medicine embody helped me understand that, you know, while Western medicine has many gifts, and particularly in rheumatology, you know, with the advent of our new therapy, certainly the waiting room look a lot different than they did 20 years ago. So it's not really one or the other, but I just began to understand that these other therapies are so complementary to what we're already doing and so helpful for the doctor-patient relationship, because when doctors feel like they're being taken care of and they can take care of themselves, they're in such a better position to really take care of their patients. And so I began to notice that right away as soon as I started the fellowship. And it also, it gave me a very good scientific and evidence-based foundation for all the things that I didn't learn in medical school and in my training, like nutrition, and are there phytochemicals or supplements that are helpful, particularly in rheumatoid arthritis. It helped me look through that lens, whereas really before that, my lens had been focused on pharmaceuticals. So it really opened up my mind that there's a whole lot of other therapies out there that we can be using. And that in doing that, you know, we can give our patients so much more agency, so much more choice, but also that we give them so much more that they can do to help themselves get better, as opposed to just leaning on their doctors for another drug. So, you know, overall, I felt like it helped me personally, the training, and it really, really broadened my depth of understanding of how inflammation is so multifaceted and it's so affected by so many different systems in the body. And then it really helped me learn how to take much more of a whole body approach as opposed to just looking at inflammation of one organ, say a joint, and, you know, and trying to target it from there.
Indeed. It certainly is more empowering than just submitting to a prescription to actively engage patients in their own outcomes and giving them tools by which they feel they can participate in a healing process. Since depression is a major feature of many of these rheumatological diseases, it's well known in rheumatoid arthritis and in other conditions.
Yeah, I mean, certainly that is the case. Depression, chronic pain, anxiety. And, you know, it's one of the chicken or the egg type things, because we know that people who experience emotional trauma early in life are more likely to develop an autoimmune disease later in life. And then, of course, people who experience autoimmune diseases and chronic pain, and of course, that puts them much more at risk for depression. So I think it goes in both directions. And I think really targeting the depression and certainly targeting the chronic pain is really important in people getting better.
Indeed. So, and what are some of the conditions that are comprised by your practice, the practice of rheumatology? What goes under the rubric of rheumatologic or autoimmune conditions?
Yeah, well, so, you know, all autoimmune type diseases like rheumatoid arthritis, lupus, psoriatic arthritis, spinal arthritis, like spondyloarthropathies and ankylosing spondylitis. And then there are rare diseases as well. And then in my practice, I also spend a lot of time on preventative autoimmune disease. And what that means is that particularly today and particularly after COVID, I find, you know, we're doing a lot of blood work and we're finding that people have a lot of autoantibodies or markers for autoimmune diseases like rheumatoid factors or anti-nuclear antibodies, but they may not have disease symptoms at that time. But what we know is that people often develop antibodies 5 to 10 years before they may develop a syndrome. And there's a lot we can do in that intercritical time before people develop symptoms to try and prevent symptoms from ever coming or to try and mitigate it so that if it comes, we're prepared and it's not such an acute onset. So I also do a lot of what we call pre-RA and cumulative treat.
I think that that's a really important point because there are innumerable people who suffer from mild malaise, aches and pains, fatigue, and they may have some low-grade markers of infection, but they don't catch the ring and get an actual diagnosis. They may have a positive ANA, but they don't have some of the attributes of a classic rheumatological condition. I think you'll agree. And so the strategy for them essentially is, well, let's just wait until you develop a full-blown illness, and then we can deploy the powerful anti-inflammatory, immune suppressive agents that we have in our arsenal. But in the meantime, we're waiting for the other shoe to drop.
Yeah. And that's really, I feel like today we can do so better than that, but you're right. I mean, that was certainly the paradigm that I was trained in and practiced in for many years. But of course, you know, what we know today is that there are many risk factors for developing autoimmune conditions that are reversible and that if we know about them, you know, we can take steps toward making those things much better. So of course, you know, a big one would be the Western diet, very high in omega-6 fatty acid. But, you know, other things like smoking, vitamin D deficiency, or perioral gum disease is a big risk factor for developing rheumatoid arthritis later in life. As well as, again, going back to mental health. So, you know, ongoing stress, chronic pain, all these things drive the sympathetic nervous system, which is really involved in pushing inflammation and triggering disease. So, you know, when we see now, if we see somebody with one of these autoantibodies, we can spend some time trying to educate them about these risk factors so that there's a lot that they can do to prevent the onset or certainly delay it and certainly make it much more mild.
So before we get to the armamentarium of natural therapies and talk about diet and various supplements, let's go over, you know, some of the conventional strategies. And my impression is in the field of rheumatology, they've sort of flipped the script. It used to be that they would sort of wage war incrementally against rheumatological conditions, that they would start with, you know, a relatively mild medication, you know, maybe hydroxychloroquine or something like that, which has lately gained a lot of attention around COVID. But, you know, it's a classic medication for rheumatoid conditions. And then they would up the ante, you know, perhaps, I mean, we'd certainly use non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, you know, lots and lots of those. And then maybe some immunosuppressant, maybe methotrexate. And then, I don't know, it must have been a couple of decades ago, there was the advent of the so-called biologics, and they were considered a last resort. But now it appears that what they're encouraging is earlier use of these strong biologics. They can be miraculous in terms of, you know, altering the course of disease. They are called DMARDs, disease-modifying anti-rheumatic drugs, if my memory serves me right. But they do come with some downsides and hazards, don't they?
Yeah, they certainly do. And you're 100% right. So today we use what's called a treat to target approach, which means we like to intervene early. And early meaning we like to intervene, we're really talking about rheumatoid arthritis here, before there's any evidence on an x-ray that the joint has been damaged. And that's because we know that if we can keep that joint intact, we don't have any erosion into bone or damage to the lining of the joint, then people do much better, regardless of which agent we use. So that's the genesis behind this accelerated approach, or that's the thinking behind it. But you're right. Of course, with more aggressive treatment comes more aggressive side effects. So typically we start with one of what we would call, what you correctly named, the oral DMARDs. And those are usually Plaquenil or Methotrexate. And both of those are old drugs with pretty good safety profiles. But within 3 months, if we don't feel like people have really reached a low level of disease activity, and of course we measure that by determining if the joints are still swollen, if they're tender, we can look for blood work markers, we can check x-rays. If we don't feel like people are achieving the result that we want, then of course now we have a whole armamentarium of what are called biologics. And of course, some of those are biologics that are injections and infusions, and then some of those are what we call targeted synthetic DMARD biologics, which are pills. And they are very effective drugs. They work at the level of the joint to really stop that damage. But in doing so, they have to suppress different arms of the immune system. And of course, your immune system is what allows your body to defend itself against infection, to squash a precancerous cell so it doesn't blossom into a cancer, and of course, to maintain defend itself from autoimmunity. So that's where we start seeing some of the side effects. So with the traditional biologic DMARDs, which were the first ones that came out, those are injection and infusion, you know, we can see more of the common infections, but of course, rarely we can see very serious infections like tuberculosis reactivation or serious fungal infections, serious bacterial infection. So obviously that's very concerning. And, you know, we have to screen people to see if they're candidate for these drugs in the first place. But sometimes, unfortunately, even people who seem like they would do just fine on these drugs will experience one of these complications. And of course, the other thing that always comes up with these biologic DMARDs is, you know, the question of, do they increase your risk of cancer? And of course, that's actually a more difficult question to answer in rheumatoid arthritis. And it's difficult because if you have untreated rheumatoid arthritis that's very active, the rheumatoid arthritis itself will increase your risk of cancer. So when we use biologic DMARDs, we think of it that they take away the risk from the untreated rheumatoid arthritis because they quiet the disease down. But then, of course, they add in some of their own risk.
So six of one, half dozen of the other. Yeah, right.
Yeah. But either way, there is an increased cancer risk. So that's something that we have to do surveillance for, particularly in people at higher risk.
It sounds like you as a rheumatologist are uniquely situated to know when to hold and when to fold when it comes to applying these stronger medications. You might start out with a mild medication and a lifestyle approach. And if that's successful, then we can forego the use of the big guns. But then, you know, should the momentum of the inflammatory condition be too great to overcome with a mere diet change or certain supplements, then you have, at least in your tool bag, the opportunity to use a stronger medication, at least perhaps temporarily, until the patient may respond to lifestyle measures, and then you can taper that medication.
Yeah, I really find that to be true. And we're starting even to have some studies to back that up. Obviously, lifestyle changes like diet particularly, those are things that are harder to study than, say, a medication, just because what we eat is so varied and it's just hard to get everybody to eat the same thing. But there is a rheumatologist at UCSD by the name of Monica Gumma, who developed what's called the ITIS diet, I-T-I-S, and did a pilot study in rheumatoid arthritis patients and found that people who adhered to the diet really had a very dramatic reduction in both their fatigue and their level of pain. And her diet is actually pretty similar to the Mediterranean diet, which, of course, is the tried and true diet that it helps so many conditions. But to tailor it to rheumatoid arthritis, she did ask people to eliminate gluten and to eliminate dairy with the exception of fermented dairy like yogurt, and to eliminate red meat and eat more fish, and then to have a smoothie with fruits and vegetables every day. And there were some other things too, like green tea and the use of turmeric and black pepper in cooking. But what she found was that most people found the diet to be, you know, reasonable. They were able to follow it. It wasn't prohibitively expensive or the ingredients weren't difficult to find, and it was palatable. And it was a small study, but it was encouraging because in rheumatology, we really like to see data. You know, we're used to seeing data with our drug. So it was really nice to see some data with this diet that affirms what we all see in our clinical practice. I think that, you know, when people veer away from the processed food and the sugar and certainly the soda, which is an independent risk factor for rheumatoid arthritis, drinking sugar sweetened soda. When people veer away from that, they do tend to feel better and their medications seem to work better and longer. And that's actually really important in rheumatoid arthritis because what we often see is we put people on a biologic and it worked for a month or two and then it stops working. And then we have to keep switching it. And as we go to our algorithm, then we're getting into biologics that not only have the side effects of infection and cancer that we discussed, but once we start talking about some of the targeted synthetic PBARD, then we're talking about side effects, including increased risk of cardiovascular events.
Perfect.
So we really don't like to see people cycling through medication. And I certainly have found that you know, adherence to a good diet, and there are some other measures as well, plays a big role in stopping that cycling.
And there's a lot of controversy about what the ideal diet is for, say, I mean, the classic rheumatological condition, of course, is rheumatoid arthritis. And there have been some studies looking at vegan diets with some efficacy, some studies that look at fasting. Fasting is actually something, you know, we could talk a little bit about fasting and what fasting does to the body in terms of repair and reducing inflammation. And then there's also the notion that something called the AIP, the autoimmune paleo diet, which might place a little more emphasis on animal protein, but eschews grains entirely and dairy entirely, that may have some efficacy. So, you know, different roads lead to Rome.
Yeah. And I agree. There, you know, I've seen the study too, and all of those diets have shown some efficacy. I really feel like with food and eating, it's so important to meet people where they are. So, you know, I'm thinking of a patient that I saw last week, a young woman who was already diagnosed with an eating disorder. You know, that's not someone who I'd ever want put on a very restrictive vegan diet.
That's sort of putting gasoline on a fire, is to say, don't eat this, don't eat that, don't eat the other thing. Yeah, not a good idea.
Yeah. But, you know, for some people I've found they have gone vegan and it's just been life changing. So I think it's, you know, it's very individualized. I would say from, you know, just a strict rheumatologic point of view, another issue that I see with a vegan diet long-term is osteoporosis.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you know, people with rheumatoid arthritis and lupus and Sjogren's, of course, they are at increased risk for that to begin with. So then if we throw in a vegan diet, it may help with the joint inflammation, but it may put their bones at risk for osteoporosis later in life. So generally, if people want to do that, I say fine, but then at some point, I feel like we have to find a way to increase the calcium intake and increase the protein intake to protect the bone.
Indeed.
And then I, you know, I have a lot of patients who have had a lot of success with intermittent fasting. And a lot of people, I think, find that pretty easy to do in that it's less restricted in terms of what you have to eat. It's just more restrictive in terms of when you can eat it.
Mm-hmm. And so there's this process that it induces that's called autophagy. And autophagy may be something that is very beneficial for immunity, for enhancing and balancing immunity, because we don't actually want to accentuate immunity. You want to balance it. So it may have sort of an adaptogenic effect on immunity. And then there's the notion that, you know, this enables the body to do a cleanup, you know, while you're fasting or restricting calories, kind of maybe clear out some of those immune complexes that are causing problems.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think there's a lot of benefits to doing that. I would just say that Plaquenil, which is one of the drugs we use a lot of, interferes with that autophagy process.
Mm-hmm.
So usually if people are going to do that, then we have to switch the drugs if they're taking that. And then, of course, Plaquenil can also cause low blood sugars, and sometimes some people are for that with fasting diets as well. So
incidentally, that's hydroxychloroquine, by the way, isn't it?
That is hydroxychloroquine, yeah.
Right, which has gained a lot of notoriety or fame around COVID. So a rheumatological drug has found at least claimed efficacy against COVID. Some of the trials disappointing, but that's actually a major tool. And at one point, it got hard for some of my patients with rheumatological conditions to get Plaquenil because there was a run on hydroxychloroquine and they were finding it hard to get. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. That was a really big problem. Yeah, I'm really glad that's over and now I can stop calling around trying to find that drug. But there was a run on it for COVID, but didn't really pan out in the trial.
Yep.
I mean, one nice thing about Plaquenil is that it's one of the rheumatologic drugs that we think of as being COVID neutral, meaning it may not help your COVID, but it's not going to make it worse. Yep. And it's not going to interfere with vaccine responses.
Indeed. Okay, good point in which to pause because we divide our podcast into two parts. And in part two, I want to take a deeper dive on supplements because having graduated from the Andrew Weil program in integrative medicine, you're likely to be an aficionado of supplements, and supplements may play a role in rheumatoid arthritis and other autoimmune conditions. We'll hear about some of those in just a moment when we return. Our guest is Dr. Jill Weintraub. You can find out more about her at Jill Weintraub, MD. Weintraub is spelled Weintraub. So it's JillWeintraubMD.com. And her book is Strategies to Treat Psoriasis and Psoriatic Arthritis, Everything You Wish Your Doctor Had Told You. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.